He acted fast. 10 minutes later, they had a mineral analyzer rigged and Chirk's head in it. 20 minutes of investigation, and they had an answer. Chirk did not have any bronze object in her head. She did have a silver capsule, but it was of different shape and size. There were 12 females from the American compound, and after a great deal of hustle and bustle and assembly line treatment, they had established that none of the females had a bronze object in their brains. But they did have silver ones of the same pattern as Chirk's. Two pilots took off for the morgue in the clouds, accompanied by a fur-wrapped McKendrick, and they soon established, working in the icy blast of a keen wind, that they had 3 females in that lot. That night, McKendrick held out the different capsule to Johnny and Angus. He had removed it from the female corpse that had been brought back. Careful examination showed it to have a less complex internal filament, but that was all they could tell.
"I don't think that could be cut out either,"
said Dr. McKendrick.
"The structure of the female skull is even more complicated than the male's. All I can contribute is that it probably puts out a different message when activated."
That seemed to be pretty well that. However, the bronze cruelty factor was missing in a female. So the following morning, Johnny had another talk with Chirk.
"How would you like a job?"
Well, that would be wonderful. It just showed he was cute. Because she couldn't go back to Cyclo now. Turl had ruined her company record, and they would never re-employ her with the black marks of disobedience all over the file. And if he promised not to send her back to Cyclo, and paid her usual wage of 200 galactic credits a month, a job would be a very good thing, for she was going mad from inactivity and no cosmetics. For a long time now, they had been taking galactic credits out of company payroll offices, out of the wallets of dead Cyclos, out of canteen cash drawers, and they had a couple of million credits kicking around. So it was feasible. They struck a bargain. Loosed with a breathe mask and a sentry, Chirk promptly found a few yards of cloth in supply, was escorted down to the lake, and oblivious of crocodiles, took a bath. She then demanded access to the minerals sample room of the compound. She got some white gypsum, put it in a mortar and finely pulverized it, and put it in a sample bag. She threw some copper in a retort, added some acid, boiled it all away, washed the residue, and mixed it with some clear motor grease. She put it in a can. She got some tractor paint out of the storeroom, deepened its color to a brilliant purple by boiling it, and added simple stain dye, and then poured in a pungent thinner. She put the last in a bottle. Then she went to the tailor shop and slashed an annealed dress uniform cloth. She took some seat covering and cut it and annealed it into a pair of flare-topped boots and demanded to be taken back to her room. Shortly there emerged the most stylish female a Cyclo Street had ever seen. Although the breathe mask hid the face makeup, one supposed that it was there for morale. And if you looked closely through the leaded faceplate, you could see that she had brilliant green lip bones, a glaring white nose bone, and white and green circles around her eye bones. Her claws were a glaring shade of purple. The white dress uniform cloth was topped with a flaring gold collar and bound about by a gold-colored belt, and her boots were gold with purple sole lines. Chirk then demanded access to another room where the other females were kept, and thereafter the current base commander was besieged with demands for more contracts at 200 galactic credits a month, and clothes. Although Johnny had not really expected much help from that quarter, he got it unexpectedly. Shortly, he would get trouble, but to begin with, it was revelatory.